Chapter 28. In a Blizzard. Glancing over uneasily at Jessica, Peter tried to reverse out of the ditch, but the tyres only spun, sinking the car even deeper into the snow. "Sorry, Jess," he said at last. "I guess we're stuck." There was a hint of laughter in her eyes. "Now what?" she asked with a smile. "I'm not sure," Peter responded, thankful that she could see some humour in the situation. He sure couldn't. "Any suggestions?" The snow was up past the window on Jessica's side. There was no way she could even open her door. All around them the blizzard raged incessantly. "It'll take hours to dig ourselves out," she said. "That's if we have a shovel." "We don't," Peter said with regret. "And it'll soon be dark." "Maybe someone will stop and help us. Maybe we should get out and hitch a ride." "But if your car gets all covered with snow, the snow plough might hit it," Jessica worried. Peter looked at her seriously. "I'm more concerned about getting you home safely than what might happen to my car." Jessica turned red. "Do you have some warmer things to put on?" Peter asked, reaching deep into the back to pull out his winter gear. It was hard to find anything under all the suitcases and boxes. "I do have a few things," Jessica replied uneasily, "but I think they're all in the trunk." Once he'd pulled out his own things, Peter waded through the knee-deep drifts of snow to open his trunk. The wind blasted everything inside with the whirling flakes of snow. As Jessica had told him, her hat and mitts were in the front pocket of her suitcase, but Peter couldn't find her scarf anywhere. Jessica's hood didn't tie up, so when Peter got back into the car, he put his own scarf around her neck. "You'd better wear this," he said, wrapping it around her collar and fixing the ends firmly. "But what about you?" "Guys are supposed to be tough," he grinned, "so I'll try my best." "Thanks, Peter." Before they left the car, Peter rummaged through the suitcases and boxes one more time in order to find his backpack and Jessica's purse. There was no telling how long it would be until he had his car back, if ever. What a shame, when his parents had only just given it to him. Once he'd found their bags, Peter turned around to notice that Jessica was sitting with her eyes closed. Her lips were moving silently. So she was praying for them. Peter hadn't thought of doing that, but he was glad that she had. Peter helped Jessica climb out of the car, and he didn't let go of her arm. "Let's stay together," he yelled over the roar of the blizzard winds. "It's too cold to stand still. We have to walk." Peter hoped that if another vehicle didn't come along soon, they might eventually come to a gas station or a house. For at least 15 minutes they shuffled through the snowdrifts on the side of the road, ducking their heads against the fierce, raging wind. Peter kept hoping to see the lights of another vehicle or a warm place of shelter, but there was nothing, or at least nothing that they could see. The snow was swirling around so thickly that it was impossible to see more than 20 meters in any direction. As the minutes slowly ticked by, Peter was surprised that not even one car appeared. Had most people taken the winter storm warning seriously and stayed at home? The wind was whipping against them, driving icy particles into any exposed skin. It was brutally cold. Peter's neck wasn't feeling as tough as he'd hoped it would. He knew they needed to find shelter soon. Every now and again they turned around to see if any vehicles were coming the other way. Finally, a spot of light pierced through the blustery, blowing snow. "A car!" Jessica called out. "Let's hope they stop," Peter shouted. The light brightened in intensity, and soon Peter could see that a transport truck was coming their way. He waved his arm so that the driver would notice them. The transport truck passed them by slowly and then slid to a stop. Peter and Jessica ran up to the cab. A heavy-set man leaned out the window. "Hey, would you guys like a lift?" "We'd love one," Peter called out without any hesitation. Opening the passenger door, he helped Jessica up into the cab and followed close behind. Words could hardly express the relief he felt when they were safely shut inside. "Nasty weather," the man remarked with a chuckle. "Not a good day for a walk." He looked over at Peter with a grin as his big lumbering vehicle began to creep forward. "Was that your car I saw back there in the ditch?" "Yeah," Peter replied ruefully. "I took my eyes off the road for an instant and that was that." "Doesn't take much in this kind of weather," the driver sympathised. "My name's Bob, by the way. What's yours? Where are you heading?" They explained to him who they were and where they lived. To their delight, Bob stated that he had to pass through Stirling. He was happy to take them home. "That would be so good of you, Bob," Peter expressed. "We weren't sure what we were going to do. I was getting pretty worried." "No problem," he assured them. "I'm glad to help folks out when I can. There's no telling when this storm will lift. The weather report is saying it'll go on all night." He paused with an anxious expression. "You'll have to hope you have a car to come back for." A car can be replaced, Peter remarked. We're just lucky you came along when you did. Jessica unwrapped the scarf from her face. God answers prayer, she said softly. Peter felt gently rebuked. Perhaps it wasn't a matter of luck. Taking off his gloves, he rubbed his raw neck. The warm air from the heater felt so good. Jessica looked over compassionately. She looked like she was about to say something, but Bob interrupted. Prayer? He asked. Are you religious? Yes, Peter replied. Are you? Nah, not me, but my mother-in-law sure is. She's always trying to get me to watch these videos of hers. What kind of videos? Well, I've actually only seen one. It was called The Omega Code. It was kind of scary. I've no problem watching horror movies. I know they're fakes, but this whole Antichrist thing is supposed to be for real, they say. I think she's trying to scare me into going to church. Antichrist? Peter looked at Jessica and she smiled back at him. What's the plot? Peter asked. Bob explained how the movie was based around the discovery of a secret code deciphered from the Bible using computer technology. The code captured the attention of world leaders. It gave important details of major events that had already occurred and predicted future events to come. In the movie, Alexander Stone, the head of the UN, contrived to capture the computer program and then used the code to plot every move in his scheme to dominate the world. He starts off as a real nice guy, Bob relayed, trying to bring peace to everyone. He has these amazing inventions that he gives to poor nations, and he brings peace to Israel, stuff like that. People don't realize that he really intends to take over the world. Does he build the Jews a temple? Jessica asked. Yeah, how'd you guess? He builds the Jews a temple right next to that dome the Arabs have. Does he end up taking over the Jews' temple and proclaiming himself to be God? Peter inquired. Sure does, Bob replied, confused. Now, if you two haven't seen the movie, how do you know all about it? Sounds a lot like Left Behind, Peter remarked. He and Jess compared a few other details with Bob, finding out that the Omega Code also describes 7 years of tribulation and an Antichrist who is murdered and comes back to life possessed by the devil. I wonder who was behind the production, Peter mused. Who produced it? Bob echoed. Well, my mother-in-law says it's based on some books by Hal somebody. Hal Lindsay? Jessica guessed. Yeah, that sounds about right. Jessica nodded her head. I've heard of his books. Wow, this whole Antichrist theory is such a strange mixture of truth and error. You think there's some truth to it? Bob asked, looking a little concerned. Yes, there's a little. The writers have tried to take their predictions from the Bible, she replied fairly. Only they've sadly gone off base on a few key things and will likely do more harm than good. Like what? For the next hour, as they crept along through the blizzard, Jessica and Peter filled Bob in on what the Bible actually predicts for the future. Together they contrasted the truth about Christ's second coming with the mistaken beliefs about Antichrist, advising Bob that the Christian world was setting themselves up to reject Jesus Christ at his return. Such an animated discussion kept their minds off the bad road conditions. There were virtually no breaks in the weather, and only occasionally did they see a snowplow or another vehicle. The main highway was covered with several centimetres of snow, and when Bob touched his brakes gently, Peter could feel the huge truck slide ever so slightly. He hated to think what would happen if Bob had to hit the brakes hard. Bob, however, didn't seem to be the least bit concerned. He just kept on asking questions and welcoming their responses. Once when they began a steep descent down a long winding hill, Peter noticed that Jessica was giving another silent prayer. I tell ya, Bob continued with a shake of his head as the big truck laboured heavily in low gear. After seeing that movie, I've been having nightmares about Lucifer. It's a scary thing for the devil to take over a man's body like that. When that stone guy came back to life, he had snake eyes. The devil, eh? Peter remarked, and they call him Lucifer. Isn't that his name? The Bible only mentions Lucifer once, Jessica said, reaching into her purse for a pocket-sized King James version of the Bible. Peter watched her turn up Isaiah chapter 14. This was a prophecy he knew nothing about. People use this prophecy in Isaiah to prove that the devil is a fallen angel, she explained. But if you read carefully from the beginning, you'll see that it's really a prophecy against a man, the king of Babylon. The king of Babylon is the one who's called Lucifer, and there's no mention of the devil or Satan at all. Was Lucifer the king's name? Not a proper name, she smiled. Lucifer is the Hebrew word for day star. It's a figure of speech for Venus, which appears just before dawn and climbs the sky during the day. So why is this king called a day star? Bob asked, with a puzzled expression on his face. Well, you see, Jessica told him, in the language of the Bible, ascending to heaven means that someone is being exalted to a higher position or becoming puffed up with pride. If someone falls from heaven, they are completely humiliated. This king of Babylon is likened to a rising star. I guess we even use that figure of speech today for actors and singers, Peter interjected. That's right, Jessica said. And because this king elevates his position of power above God, God will bring him down to the grave to lie with all the other carcasses of kings and men. So what does it say exactly? Bob asked curiously. Jessica quickly glanced over the chapter to see what section she should read out loud. Can I read you the whole chapter? Sure, we've got lots of time. In a quiet, gentle manner, Jessica read the chapter, stopping from time to time to pull out the relevant details. Thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon. See, she said, verse 4 indicates this parable is directed towards the king of Babylon. Then in verses 6 to 11, it poetically describes the cedar trees rejoicing that this mighty king could no longer order them to be cut down in the siege against Jerusalem. Hell, or the grave, she explained, figuratively awakens the dead to welcome this king to his final resting place, rotting amongst the worms. Beginning in verse 12, Peter offered to read. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, Is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms? Peter looked up to watch the road as Bob navigated a tight corner. The language of the prophecy reminded him of 2 Thessalonians 2. It sounded like the man of sin. Hey, is this related to Antichrist somehow? He asked Jessica. She nodded, pointing back to the first two verses. It says this song will be sung after the kingdom is restored to Israel, so it must have a future application. Once the road had straightened out again, Jessica continued, telling Bob that the king of Babylon would amass great power to himself on the earth and therefore become puffed up with pride. But he is only a man, not some supernatural being, she clarified. As verse 16 says, is this the man that made the earth tremble, that did shake kingdoms? Finishing off the chapter, Jessica added, because of this king's pride, God has promised to bring complete destruction on Babylon, that nothing will be left to them. Not only will this proud king not have a dignified burial, he'll be cast out of his grave and trodden on. All right, Bob shrugged, thinking it over. So this king is only a man. That's right. And Lucifer only means Daystar, Bob mused. Daystar isn't quite so sinister sounding, but whatever his name is, the devil still scares me. Bob's question led to another interesting discussion as they looked through Isaiah 14. As Peter listened to Jessica's explanation, he could see that the chapter clearly referred to the king of Babylon as Lucifer. In verse 16, he was even called a man. When Bob began asking questions about the devil, Peter was able to show him some of the passages he'd looked at the week before. Wow, how will I ever remember all this? Bob moaned. It's very interesting, but I'll never be able to explain it to my mother-in-law. Do you have email? Well, no, I'm not much into computers. Peter asked Jess for a piece of paper, which she managed to find in her purse, as well as a pen. Here, I'll give you our postal address, Peter offered, scribbling it down. We'd be happy to keep in touch. The 150 kilometres to Stirling took 4.5 hours that night, and while the highway driving had been very difficult, when they reached the city and looked down the side streets lit up under the streetlights, Peter could see they were impassable. Over 0.5 metre of snow lay heaped up everywhere, with huge drifts rippling across. As usual, with such a heavy snowfall, the snow ploughs were barely able to keep the main highways clear and nothing had been done anywhere else. It was going to be a tough walk up the last street home. Bob noticed the conditions as well. Sorry I won't be able to drop you off at the door, he apologised as the big truck skidded lightly to a stop. No problem, Peter said. Jess and I are so thankful that you've brought us all the way here, and with such an interesting discussion. Would you like to stay at our place for the night? Jessica offered. With a laugh, Bob replied, thanks, but this weather doesn't bother me much. I've got deadlines to meet, if you know what I mean. Before getting out, Peter and Jessica shook Bob's hand, thanking him once again. Been most enjoyable, Bob assured him. That was the quickest 4 hours I've ever seen pass. Peter helped Jessica down from the high cab. They waved goodbye as Bob rolled away, and then they turned towards home, plunging into the knee-deep snow. In town, the wind wasn't nearly as wild as it had been along the open highway. The freshly dumped snow gave the whole neighbourhood a lovely decorated appearance. It was truly a picture-book scene with all the houses aglow and big flakes glittering under the streetlights. After sitting for so long, the vigorous exercise was welcome. Here and there, the snow was packed hard from the wind, and Peter and Jessica could actually walk on top of the drifts for a few steps before sinking into the soft spots once more. It became a challenge to see who could stay on top of the drifts for the longest. Being lighter, Jessica had the advantage. By the time they reached the Simons' front door, their boots were filled with snow, their coats were completely white, and even their eyelashes were frosted over. There was a loud cry of delight as Craig and Beth responded to the doorbell and threw their arms around them. "Were we ever worried about you?" Craig exclaimed, slapping Peter's back and sending an avalanche of snow onto the floor. "How on earth did you manage to get home in this storm?" Beth was crying. Peter had never seen her cry before. She couldn't even speak as she held Jessica close. Craig could hardly say enough about how thankful they were to have them home safely. Even Alan came over to give Peter a hug. It was a warm welcome and a wonderful feeling to be safe and out of the storm. As soon as they had taken off their coats and hung them up to dry, Craig suggested that they say a prayer of thanks to God. They all stood where they were in a circle with their arms around each other, and Craig prayed, a very earnest prayer of thanks, a prayer in which Peter realized that Jessica hadn't been the only one begging God to keep them safe. Afterwards, Beth made some hot drinks, and Craig suggested they gather in the living room to hear about the adventure. They all wanted to hear every last detail. When Peter headed downstairs to his room in the basement late that night, it was with a heart filled with joy. He had a new friend who cared enough to pray for him. He felt an integral part of the Simons family, and he was very thankful to be home.